भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 17 टेक्स्ट नंबर 2 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द डिसेंट ऑफ द रिवर गेंजेस ट्रांसलेशन। ध्रुव महाराज द फेमस सन ऑफ महाराज उत्तानपाद इज नोन एज द मोस्ट एक्साल्टेड डिवोटी ऑफ द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड because of his firm determination in executing devotional service. Knowing that the sacred Ganges water washes the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, Dhruva Maharaj, situated in his own planet to this very day, accepts that water on his head with great devotion. Because he constantly thinks of Krishna very devoutly within the core of his heart, he is overcome with ecstatic anxiety. Tears flow from his half-open eyes and eruptions appear on his entire body. Purport by His Divine Grace Lalaji Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. When a person is firmly fixed in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is described as Vira Vrata, fully determined. Such a devotee increases his ecstasy in devotional service more and more. Thus, as soon as he remembers Lord Vishnu, his eyes filled with tears. This is a symptom of Mahabhagavat. Dhruva Maharaj maintained himself in that devotional ecstasy, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also gave us a practical example of transcendental ecstasy when he lived at Jagannath Puri. His pastimes there are fully narrated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I sincerely seek blessing of all assembled Vaishnavas before I start this presentation. So this presentation basically is a summary study of the previous chapter. And in this fifth canto, basically the creation is presented in so many different chapters. Till the subject matter begins right from the second canto, when Parikshit Maharaj is asking about the creation, and while answering, the description comes when Narada Muni also asked about the creation of to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma says very humbly that he is not the creator, he is actually the secondary creator. Everything is supplied by the Supreme Lord himself, all the ingredients, the plan, the blueprint, everything was available. He just try to, you know, activate the whole thing. So he presented how the spiritual creation is there, how the Lord may, you know, expand into four different Chaturbhuja expansions. From him comes Mahavishnu. And from Mahavishnu, these universes are created, material world, the universes. Each universe is known as Brahmanda. Now in the fifth canto, the description of the material world especially comes with the description of Brahmanda, and within that different planetary systems. And this canto ends with the description of hellish planets, the lower parts of the creation. And I believe after fifth canto there is no more talk of creation because everything is covered. So pure devotional service at all stages discussed. So in this presentation, we'll be trying to see this particular universe as presented in Srimad Bhagavatam. Now I was thinking before presenting this, why these things needs to be presented? Because of the modern education system, people have their own concept of creation. which is mostly imaginary and based on certain facts which is not complete. Now, because of such education system, when we see the description of scripture, we wonder with, you know, amazement, or we scratch our head thinking, what is this? These are kind of, so people basically reject, in the modern day, they reject it either as a mythological story, or there is no attempt on the general public to appreciate and understand, and in this way, approach God. But among these people, those who come in contact with pure devotees, some or other, by the arrangement of the Lord, and when they hear pure devotees with submission, they develop a kind of faith and understanding of the presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam, and they develop that faith. And ultimately, by the help of pure devotees and Krishna, they realize the whole thing. But for a layman, when they look at it, basically they just turn away from it because of the complexity of the whole presentations. So those who don't get an opportunity to meet a pure devotee, and even if they meet, they don't hear submissively, for them such kind of presentation is necessary, because that can induce the required faith in them so that they can come to surrender Krishna and pure devotees, basically. And even after many of us who accepted the process, still that doubt remains, that lingers in the mind. What is this? How can I understand these things? How does it, you know, cater to my logical, you know, thinking or whatever? So when these things are studied in detail by some devotees of Srila Prabhupada himself, disciples of Prabhupada, things are very clear, and this particular presentation is basically meant for devotees who have this kind of doubts. And it will help them to actually develop faith and understanding that such things actually exist. And by following particular process of Krishna consciousness, one can actually get rid of this material creation and go back to Godhead. And develop that faith that these things are actually true stories. So I basically appreciate tremendously the lot of hard work, unthinkable hard work put by His Sadaput Prabhu in creating such presentations with modern facilities. And also this presentation is based on books, his book by Sadaput Prabhu, God and Science, and also another book by His Holiness Dibambara Swami, In Search of Vedic India. Of course, there are commentaries of Srila Prabhupada, which helps us to understand the subject matter. So, okay, next. So, we'll start with a Krishna Katha picture, an analogy. This picture is, I'm referring to as an analogy. That how a complete pastime can be presented in one story. So this will be auspicious beginning also, Krishna Katha. So in this we can see that there are three pictures in which Lord Krishna is performing different pastimes. In one, we know this is Brahma Viman Lila. Yeah. In one pastime, Krishna is about to have lunch with his friends. In another part of the picture, we can see that Lord Brahma is getting bewildered by looking at the people, how this coward was engaging in the affair. And in the third picture, he is surrendering to Krishna, understands that he is actually bewildered, and all the pastime we know. And the idea is that one picture can present so many things at a time. But there is a story behind this also. Unless we know the story, we cannot understand the picture itself. Similarly, this is another picture of biblical times. Now, those who do not know the pastime, they cannot make out what is this. Any of you can try to understand what this picture is telling? We cannot, because we don't know the past times. You know the story behind, that's why. So, we can go next. So this is a story called Tribute, the Tribute Money, where the Saint Peter is meeting a tax collector, then he's meeting Jesus Christ, then he's getting the money. So three things are presented in one pastime, where the tax collector is asking Jesus Christ, Saint Peter, does your master pay tax to the temple? Then he's asking in turn to Jesus Christ, will you pay tax to the temple? Then he says, does a king gives tax to his tax collects tax from his son or from the stranger? He's asking to Saint Peter, does a king collect tax from strangers or his son? The Saint Peter says his son, from the strangers. So Jesus Christ says, yes, the son does not pay tax to his father. So therefore, he need not pay tax to the temple. But since the custom is to pay the tax, therefore you go and catch a fish. Within the mouth of fish, you'll find some gold coins and give it as a tax. So this is the story called the tribute money. So in the three different area, we can see the whole pastime is presented. Now this is how, during ancient times, many things are presented within one figure or picture. Similarly, Bhumandal also presents many things within one map. It's not that when you look at the Bhumandal map, it just tells one flat story. It's not like that. It presents many different stories within one map. So just like in these past times, we see, just by looking at picture, we cannot make out anything unless we refer to the scriptures, like your Bible, or in the past time of Krishna, to Srimad Bhagavatam. Then when you refer to the scriptures and the pictures, then you can make out what the story is about. Similarly, when we refer to Bhumandal maps, which are found all over India from ancient times, these maps can be understood only when we refer to Srimad Bhagavatam, the scriptures. So now we'll start looking at Bhumandal, or the picture of universe. Yeah, you can press. So this thing I've just described. So this is the features of a composite map. What is a composite map? It has, It has apparent contradictory pictures, like one person doing so many things, one minute make out what is, who is who. But there is an underlying intent that needs to be understood. And the advantage is that many things can be presented within one map. Okay, next. Lord Chaitanya also says that in every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam and in every syllable, there are various meanings. Similarly, within the Bhumandal map also, we'll see how there are various meanings lying within the map. Next. So Srimad Bhagavatam presents a composite map of the universe, world of our experience, a larger and complete picture of cosmos. Okay, next. So here is a sketch of the one Brahmanda, or Brahma's egg, called one universe. And this whole Brahmanda is divided in two halves by a plane called Bhumandala. So the plane that is intersecting this whole egg-like shape of universe is called the Bhumandala, the whole plane. The upper half is the heavenly half, and the lower half, which is filled with waters, corresponds to the hellish regions gradually as you go down. Now the center of this whole Bhumandala, which is the plane, just I showed, that center is called Jambudvip. Now this whole Bhumandala is divided into various dvipas or islands, which are geographic features. And each of this island is divided in many verses. just like this Jambudvipa, which is the central dvipa, is divided into 9 verses or regions. And the southmost part of this island is known as Bharatavarsha. The lower side, southmost part is called Bharatavarsha. Now, within the Jambudvip, in the center of the Jambudvip, there is a conical shaped mountain which is made of gold. Now, this mountain has a lower diameter. Lower part of the mountain is less in diameter than the top part. It's like a inverted conical shaped mountain, and the top of which lies the city of Brahma. So obviously Brahma is the creator. He wants to live in the top floor. It's like if you have a skyscraper building and those who are rich, they want to go to the top. Similarly, here we see on the top of the mountain, Lord Brahma's city is lying. So, and this mountain is called Sumeru Mountain. This is called the axis of the universe also. Just like we have Merudanda, the backbone, similarly the axis of the universe is called Sumeru Mountain. Okay, next. So here it is presented nicely that you can see the rings. Each of the rings are different dvipas, and they are divided by, they are separated by oceans, different types of oceans. And the central dvipa is Jambudvip, and from the center this huge mountain is rising. Okay. So when we look at this picture that Srimad Bhagavatam presents, one wonder whether actually it is true, or does it sound like a science fiction? What kind of thing this is? So this description to a modern unintelligent mind seem to be some kind of fantasies meant to give virtual pleasure. But actually, this whole thing presents 4 different models which are consistent with modern day data available. The whole thing, when you compare it to the scriptures and modern day data is available, then we can understand actually they present the truth. So at least these things presents 4 consistent models. The first is Bhumandala as a planisphere. I will explain what is a planisphere. Then Bhumandala as a map of solar system, Bhumandala as a topographical map of South Central Asia, and Bhumandala as a map of the celestial realm of Deva or Devaloka. So the first 3 easily matches with the currently available data. The 4th seems to be quite mystical because it involves Devaloka or the realm of Devas. But actually this also happens to match with many modern day available data. We'll see them one by one. Next. The first is the planisphere model. The word planisphere means a sphere which is projected onto a plane, or a sphere which is just like, you can look at my hands, it's like a sphere, then I open it to a plane. This is called planisphere. This is a sphere, now it's a plane. That's it. So similarly here, it's a sphere, and each of this point is projected onto a plane, which is the upper line. You can see the arrow is pointing. And when it is projected to a plane, it will look like this. So this is a map of Earth globe, which is projected onto a plane. It's called a planisphere. Similarly, the Bhumandala map, especially the Jambudvip, part of the Jambudvip, which contains Bharatavarsha, can also be projected onto a plane, and that gives what is called a globe comprising of Bhumandala, or especially the Jambudvip. Turn it to next. Here it is. So here the inner portion of Bhumandala, that is the Jambudvip and some other islands, and when it's inversely projected, it gives a sphere like this. And within that, this kind of sphere, we can see which is available within the India for a long, long time, since ancient times. And we'll see in a short video right now how these things are very nicely animated by Sadaput Prabhu. You can start the video. Sound is there?
Bhumandala as a planisphere. We begin by discussing the interpretation of Bhumandala as a planisphere, a polar projection map of the Earth globe. Each important interpretation of Bhumandala is obtained by focusing on a cluster of Bhumandala features and temporarily ignoring features outside the cluster. In this case, note that the ring-shaped islands and oceans of Bhumandala have widely varying scales as defined in the Bhagavatam. For now, we ignore this. The planisphere interpretation of Bhumandala requires that we give them all equal width. In fact, this is commonly done in diagrams of Bhumandala, such as this one, dating to the early 19th century. Bhumandala with equalized rings can be seen as a stereographic projection of a spherical Earth. Stereographic projection is an ancient method of mapping points on the surface of a sphere to points on a plane. This method can be applied to map a modern Earth globe onto a plane. This flat projection is called a planisphere. Bhumandala can likewise be viewed as a stereographic projection of a globe. Such globes exist in India. Here is one that was probably commissioned by Sawai Jai Singh, Raja of Jaipur, in the early 18th century. In this globe, the land area between the equator and the mountain arc is Bharata Varsha, corresponding to Greater India. India is well represented, but apart from a few references to neighboring places, this globe does not give a realistic map of the Earth.
Okay. Next. So this is where he ended. This is a globe of the just we saw in the video, which represents part of this thing is India. We can see there are there is Gaya, Bengal, Utkal, then Dravida this, and so many things are there. Nasik is there. Punjab is there. But this region is not just the Earth itself. This globe is not the Earth globe. It is the entire Bhumandala actually. So therefore you can see there are like these dvipas are there, other dvipas are also there, and the oceans are also there. Downwards you can see ocean of wine. So we are going down hellish planets. And if you go up, you can see other things. So, now, when people look at this picture, ancient pictures of the map, they say that the ancient didn't know that Earth is a globe, or because the Earth appears to be a flat thing on this map. They thought that the Bhagavatam presents Earth as a flat plate, not a sphere as we know it now. But actually it is not true, because Srimad Bhagavatam indirectly indicates at many places the Earth is also a globe. For example, it says, when there is a day at one part of the world, exactly at the opposite side there is night. That means if it were a plane, just a flat plate, just imagine, and the sun is shining above us, then it would be day at all the places, or it will be night at all the places at one point of time. It cannot be simultaneously day and night. So this thing is also presented in next video. Just play it.
Although the Bhagavatam does not explicitly describe the Earth as a globe, it does so indirectly. For example, it points out that night prevails diametrically opposite to a point where it is day. Likewise, there is sunset opposite a point where the sun is rising. According to the Bhagavatam, the sun orbits just above Bhumandala on its chariot. Taken literally, the sun's rays should spread out smoothly over the plain of Bhumandala, leaving no points of sunrise or sunset, and no area in total darkness. This seems to contradict the Bhagavatam's statement about day and night at diametrically opposite points. But there is no contradiction if we adopt the planisphere interpretation of Bhumandala.
So we see that the Bharatvarsha is presented in Jambudvip, is not just the whole picture. It is, although the maps are seeming to be not appearing not to be agreeing with the data available, but actually the purpose is not just geographical, the purpose is astronomical. It's like in a huge scale the whole thing is presented. So in a different way the same thing is presented. Although it was known to the ancients, or especially the followers of the Vedas, that the earth is actually a globe, not a flat plate. So in this way we can see how the Bhumandala is presented, or the earth is presented within the Bhumandala. So next, the same Bhumandala map is also can be used to present solar system. So we can go to the next. Here we see there are three things are presented. One is the solar system, a geocentric solar system, that is, Earth is in the center of the solar system, and the Earth and the Milky Way galaxy, along with the Bhumandal up to Lokaloka mountain. That's a different thing. So few rings are taken of the Bhumandal. Now, if you see the sizes of them, the Bhumandala actually matches exactly with the size of solar system. You can see, it's clear. The upper and the lower rings are exactly matching compared to the size of Earth and the Milky Way. So in this way, we can see that the Bhumandala also presents the solar system with the planets in the orbits, up to the fifth planet, Saturn, that is the Saturn planet. Now, you can go to the next. There are many historians or many people who try to know the solar system. They try to measure the orbits also. Like we know the famous person Ptolemy, who tried to show the geocentric system of solar system, and he also measured the distance of planet Earth to the Sun, which is not close to the modern data available. But when we see the Bhumandala map and try the Sadaput Prabhu, actually they did the measurements, the distance between Earth globe and Sun is exactly matching with the modern day data available. So the same map also presents the solar system. Normally, when we see the Bhumandala as a plane, it also presents a plane in the sense that the solar system itself is a completely plane. The Sun and the planets which are revolving around it are actually presented in one plane. So in this way you can see the Bhumandala also presents the solar system. Okay, next. The third is that Bhumandala as a local map of South Central Asia. Now, if we consider the Jambudvip itself, in the Jambudvip, there are different mountains which divide the whole deep in different verses or regions. And especially Jambudvip also, there are rivers which refer to Bharatvarsha, India, within India. So when we compare this map with the map of South Central Asia, that is the Himalayas, near about the Himalayas, they saw the same kind of picture. Although now this map on the earth is not the Jambudvip. It is just representing the same thing. We can see that the Pamir Mountains range in the center can be compared to the Mount Sumeru. But it is not Mount Sumeru. It is on the earth itself. But such map is exactly matching. The same kind of mountain ranges are there. The rivers are there. And this map is useful. One may ask, why he is comparing this map with the Jambudvip? That question may come. But this map was useful during ancient times because the famous Silk Road passes through these mountain ranges. So using the same map, people used to come to India to, import silk and spices, so many things. Therefore, the same thing also matches with the Bhumandala map. So this is a realistic map. The next is, This is the main part which I actually want to discuss. It is how the Bhumandala also present the celestial realm of Devas or Devalok. So of the 9 verses that Bhumandala presents, Jambudvip presents, only the earth or Bharatvarsha is the region where human being sleeps. It is said that all 8 other verses are Devaloka, or the realm where demigods inhabits. So then naturally one may ask question, why these things are presented within the same map, Devalokas? Actually, let us first understand why these are Devalokas. When we study Srimad Bhagavatam, you can go to the next. In the Bhagavatam, there are very unrealistic distances given that appears to be unrealistic to our senses, which is, for example, that the distance of India from north to south is 72,000 miles. That is 3 times the circumference of Earth. Now, when we look at this figure, we get bewildered. Because it's not that the Indians did not know about this. Because from early times we know that people used to go on pilgrims. And they know how far from north and south to east, north-south distance is. Like from south, people would go to Himalayas for performing austerities and tapasyas. Similarly, they knew how far India is. So when you speak of such a huge distance, what does it refer to? Actually, it refers to the Devalokas. Or, Janalis Radhan Swami ki jai. So, the Bhumandal, it also presents the demigod realms. In this sense, so when they speak of these distances which are very huge, they refer to actually demigod planets, where the sizes are always very huge, super sizes. So, for example, you can see, this is a tree, banyan tree, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And this tree is directly compared to the size of Europe. So when you look at this picture, this tree almost as big as the size of Europe. And Lord Shiva is sitting below meditating. So when you compare the size of Lord Shiva, it almost matches the size of whole country within Europe. So when we speak of the worlds of demigods, the sizes are very huge. So therefore, when this map is overlapping with that of India, and there are regions which are very huge, so such unrealistic distances comes. It is said, within this earth globe also there are realms which are very, very large, and we cannot actually assist to it. So, just like the whole creation is made up of 5 elements, 8 elements, as Srimad Bhagavad Gita says, Bhumi Rapa Nalo Bayu Kham Mana Budhi Reya Bacha. That earth, air, fire, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. In this, 5 elements are there. And our body, for instance, has all these elements. Just like we have also earth, we have water, we have air, then mind, intelligence and ego, all these things are there. Now, when we say we have water, does not mean that much water is existing in this world. There is earth, water is combined. There are actually big, big oceans, which is a complete world in itself. Similarly, we have the element mind in ourselves, but does not mean mind is limited to that much. There can be whole world which is made of subtle elements, like mind. So similarly, we can see that that the water is there and so many living entities are living there. Similarly, there are realms which are made of subtle elements and many living entities live there, the Devalokas. So when such world are combined with our own country or our this earthly planet, the distances automatically increases. So we may be able to see the Himalayas, we may be able to all these things, but these are referring only to the earth element. But when the world of mind and all these subtle elements are combined, the distances automatically increases. Does it make any sense? Okay. So it's obvious that we can't see these worlds because they are made of different elements. We have only access to the elements like earth, water, up to fire and ether. But till now, people are trying to understand what mind is. They think mind is a combination of some molecular reactions, or they're trying to understand mind in terms of matter, in terms of earthly matter, which it is not, because Krishna says in Gita that mind is a completely different element altogether. So similarly, all these worlds, they exist in this realm, but it is very difficult for us to perceive them with the help of this body and the instruments that help us to understand with this body. So therefore, we cannot perceive these realms directly, but they do exist. Therefore, in this picture or in this map of Bhumandala, the Devalokas are automatically presented. And also, because they exist, they are real, they are presented. And also, they are connected to this earth planet. Therefore, it needs to be presented. So in this way, you can see how the Bhumandalas are actually presenting the earth planet, the Devalokas. Go to the next.
For the earth globe is identified with Bharat Varsha. But the simplest explanation of the heavenly features of Jambudvipa is that Bhumandala was intended to represent the realm of the demigods. Like the other interpretations we have considered, this one is based on a cluster of mutually consistent points in the cosmology of the Bhagavatam. The first point is that the demigods are portrayed as being so large that we are literally like ants in comparison with them. For example, this picture shows the size of Lord Shiva in relation to Europe, based on dimensions given in the Bhagavatam. This explains the enormous sizes attributed to mountains, trees, and other features in Jambudvipa. Although Jambudvipa refers to a region of this earth, it doubles as a realm of demigods of superhuman size. How can mere humans meet and interact with such gigantic beings? The answer is that travel from this earth to the celestial realm may involve a great expansion in size. For example, in the Bhagavatam story of Matsya Avatar, King Satyavrata of South India finds a remarkable fish. Later on, the fish expands to 8 million miles in length and pulls the king on a boat through a cosmic deluge covering Bhumandala. Systematic changes in size are carried out using the siddhis, or mystic powers, called anima, size reduction, and Mahima, size expansion. According to the Bhagavatam, these powers are based on the transcendental form of Vishnu, who is larger than the universes as Mahavishnu, and smaller than an atom as the Supersoul.
So here we saw that how to enter into the world of demigods, the size needs to be increased tremendously. And when we speak all this thing again, people start to look for evidences. So till recently, the prevailing mindset of modernity, they assume that they can fathom the whole universe. But when there are certain evidence come, which they cannot interpret, they reject it either as something mythology, or they don't talk about it at all. For example, go to the next. Okay, this I have already talked about. Next. For example, this question comes. Does life and intelligent life exist elsewhere in the universe? So when you come to these questions, Srimad Bhagavatam is very clear. These demigod realms are there, subtle worlds where living entities live, with many millions of lifespan spanning over millions of years, thousands of years. So now, there is certain evidence that is available to the humanity which says that life at different distant planets do exist. But because there is no direct understanding or scientific approach which can actually support this, this is not discussed or rejected. So, next. This is what I call as ET stories or extraterrestrial stories, where there are so many evidences from the 1940s which says how many living entity visited our planet. Now, there are so many evidences, but the mainstream thinkers, they don't speak about it. Even the religious establishment within the Western world, because that is the whole world is looking up to the Western world, so they also don't discuss about it. And also, especially the US government do not acknowledge, they don't talk about it. So as a result, there are many non-mainstream thinkers or a group of scholars gradually evolved to understand this subject matter. So, but when we speak about non-mainstream people or who do not present the whole academia or any government agency, then it is likely that we don't accept them or we don't accept their version as true. So therefore, I will just quote here two cases where the mainstream people have actually worked on it. One is, next, is John Mack, who is professor of psychiatry at Harvard University. He is also winner of the famous Pulitzer Prize, number one literary award in America. A very famous person. He initially did not believe about these aliens or living entity who visit from other planetary systems. But when one of his friends talked about these things, he decided to make some investigation. And he actually interviewed many people who had such witnesses. And after interviewing such people, this person, who is a psychiatrist himself, he could understand the people can lie or speak this truth. He could understand the whole story. And his conclusion was that the humans are clearly participants in a universe that is swarming with intelligent life forms, from whom we have caught ourselves. So this is what the professor is speaking. And the next, is Edgar Mitchell, who is a doctorate of science from MIT, famous institute, number one in the world. And he's saying, for me, with all the evidence, it's not a matter of believing. It's a matter of preponderance of evidence, and the evidence keep building. So these people, they understand such things are happening, but they don't have any, they can't support it to any theories or whatsoever. Or they do not have the understanding of the larger picture. But the Puranas and all other Vedic scriptures and many ancient other scriptures also clearly speak that such a thing exists, and there such people are available, such people are keep visiting our world. However, as we know, nobody from the Devaloka visits the Earth planet now because of the Kali Yuga. But obviously you can understand such visits are from the hellish planets, most of them. So now, although these data are available and the Puranas are there, but nobody turns to Puranas to understand these things. Because, as I said, because of the modern education system, people have lost faith in the Puranas. Now I'll just point out a few things. Next. Why do people lost faith in the Puranas? So first of all, in the early 19th century, I'll speak about the Indologists. The two persons who were appointed to study the Puranas from the British government were Mr. H.S. Wilson. One is Wilson, the other is Vance Kennedy. Now these two persons were the first to study the Puranas. But when they saw the quantity of the Puranas, which is actually very vast, it is said the Puranas are the largest part of Sanskrit writing, not the Vedas, not the epic histories like Ramayana or Mahabharata. It is the Puranas which comprises a vast writing in Sanskrit. So when they saw the matter, in the subject matter, they could not understand anything. So naturally, he concluded in a whimsical way that the Puranas are later creations. These are created by Brahmins. These are all fantasies and meant to please the kings and things like that. But Vance Kennedy, who also studied simultaneously with him, he said, whatever he is concluding is neither based on any facts whatsoever I have seen. So although he rejected his arguments, still Wilson's arguments were kept because he was occupying the seat of Sanskrit at Oxford University. And besides, when such a thing is projected, it was easier for the British government to rule over the India. It was easy because when the religion is weak, then automatically they look up to some authority and they can take care, do whatever they want. And when the later scholars came to study Puranas, because Wilson, who is a very famous scholar, he already gave his verdict, they lost interest to study Puranas because they thought also it's a later creation, what is the need to study? So they did not study. And whoever came later, they always refer to Wilson's statement, saying that these are later creations. And the last person was Max Muller, who, according to Devamrita Swami, he says, he closed the door on Puranas and sealed it tight. That is Max Muller. What he says, it is unsafe to use the epic poems like Mahabharata and Ramayana as authorities for the Vedic age. The same objections applies with still greater force to the Puranas. So although there is no any evidence, without evidence, one person wrote some commentaries that was carried forward till today. And all the history books, all the education media gives the same idea about the Puranas, which is completely wrong. So if we study the Vedas itself, in the for example, the Rig Veda, it says, it speaks about a world in which learned sages and poets recount histories and sing the glories of great events. So within the Veda, there is a reference of Puranas. That means it proves that the Puranas are contemporary with the Vedas. Similarly, Atharva Vedas list four Vedas and follows immediately by specifically referring to Itihasas and Puranas. So Atharva Veda also speaks about the Puranas. That means Puranas are always coexist with the Vedas. But because of such people who didn't understand Vedas at all or Puranas at all, they gave their opinion that became the verdict to the modern day man. So therefore, if we refer to Puranas and try to understand the whole creation, it becomes much easier and the true path follows. So you can see, the idea that Puranas are mythology is projected to general mass through education system. So then, all over the world, ancients also, like Puranas, refer to the aliens or the living entity who visit from the different planetary systems. And the modern day evidences are also there. So all these indicate that extraterrestrial life do exist. And if it is so, it is for sure that they are more advanced than us because they are able to visit us. And the modern day scientists, they are unable to visit the other planetary system because they are very, very far away. So for example, if you take the nearest star, maybe 1,000 light years away, and even if we travel at the speed of light, it will take 1,000 years to reach there. So it's not possible to survive that long, 1,000 years. A human being cannot live for 1,000 years at the current body. And even if he reaches there, if he wants to send one message to Earth, it will take another 1,000 years. And they reply, they will send back, it will take another 1,000 years. In this way, it is almost not practical, and they reject such projects. It's not possible to travel. So therefore, their research are limited to nearest planets, where they can actually pay a visit and come back. Still, but within that, we don't have to go so far. Because these realms, as this Bhumandala map presents, they're here right next to us. These realms in a different element form. And those who wish to visit such planetary systems, they can follow proper particular processes by which they can access to such worlds. Also, this world is said to be present in different dimensions, where one needs to travel in a different way. Just like these are called the parallel worlds, actually, in short. Now we are running out of time. So if you want to visit such places, there are certain processes by which we can actually use these shortcuts to visit such planetary systems. So what is next? So this is one example of parallel world, where we can see this yogini Chitraleka, she is carrying Aniruddha from one place or one part of the world to another part of the world. While he was sleeping in his room with closed doors, she could enter and pick him up. And this indicates another instance where people can travel in different dimensions and do their things in a proper way. So in this way, we can see how the Bhumandala actually presents not just this world, but many other worlds to which we can have access in a particular way or following particular processes. So I'll end this presentation with a small video clip which Sadaput Prabhu is presenting very nicely about how the Golok Vrindavan is also existing continuum with this world, with our Golok, which is here in India. And the pastimes occurs where people transform themselves from this world to the other world, the spiritual world, again come back also. Things like that happens. So I will end with this particular video. Sorry.
A classical example of a parallel continuum is Krishna's transcendental realm of Vrindavan, which is said to be unlimitedly expansive. This transcendental realm is said to exist in parallel to the finite earthly Vrindavan in India. A story from about 500 years ago tells of how Duki Krishna Das found an ankle ornament belonging to Radharani that fell into this dimension from the transcendental Vrindavan. He subsequently met a gopi who came from that realm to retrieve the ornament. Later on, Duki Krishna Das, who is now known as Shyamananda, entered the same transcendental realm in meditation. Thus, the transfer from one continuum to another depends on the traveler's state of consciousness.
So in this way, you can see by orienting our consciousness properly in devotional service, we can transfer ourselves to spiritual world. So thank you very much for tolerating. Srila Prabhupada ki.